Today is July the 26th, 2006. We are at the Amelia Island Museum of History, 233 South 3rd Street, Fernandina Beach, Florida, 32034. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We're interviewing James Delaney, born March 26, 1926, in Fernandina Beach, Florida. My name is Gerhard Tam, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Also attending, assisting me, is Robert Hamer, who will operate the recording equipment. I will begin the interview now. So, James, tell us a little bit about your time before you got drafted.
Before
you got the card.
Oh, okay.
The greetings. How was life like in Fernandina for you? How old were you?
Well, as I say, this was a sleepy town, nothing. And the only entertainment we had was out on the ball field. We would get out of school and go to the park where we play ball every day, and my biggest problem was trying to get home before dark. I couldn't do it to save my life. I'm always out playing ball, and the only thing we had to look forward to was going out to the city dump on weekends and gathering scrap metal so we could sell to the junk man for movie fare, which was only a nickel, to the old Ritz Theater. And that was one of the hardest problems, getting a nickel to go to the movies on Saturday. And we'd go to the movie 2:30 when it started, and we would stay there till 11:30 that night for the last movie. We'd see the movie over and over again. But it was a lot of fun growing up here in Fernandina. So many things. Everyone here had a few chickens in their yard, and that's why all our chickens had personal names. So I never ate chicken until I was 25 years old. I didn't eat no vegetables because I hated them, and I just started eating vegetables after I married. I think maybe my wife know how to cook them better than my mother. But there's still two things I never eat: onions and oysters. Everything else I eat. But it was a lot of fun growing up here in Fernandina. My classmates, and one of my best buddies, he was born the same day I was. He lived about 4 or 5 blocks from me. And when we registered to go in the Army, I was very anxious to get away from here because most of my friends had gone. And I've always wanted to see as much of the world as I could. I just love traveling.
So when did you get, you got the greeting from the president, but when did you report for the draft?
It was June the 13th, 1944.
Ah, okay.
And I was very excited about it. And I rushed out to my buddy's house to see had he got his, because we had signed up the same time. And he said no. Mine hadn't come in. I said, well, you be sure and watch your mail, because it's coming. And I had been in the Army a month before he got his.
No kidding.
But yeah. I was real disappointed in that, because I thought we'd be in the same outfit and we'd go together and we'd be together and everything. But my brother, he had been in the Army a year or so before I was, and he told me, say, whatever you do, try to take you some money when you go in the Army, because you need some money. So I got a job to container, and I worked there maybe a month or so, and I saved my money. And I had $154 when I went in the Army. I was rich.
You were rich, yes.
And yes. And I was appointed leader to lead the group to go to Fort Benning, Georgia.
From Fernandina?
From Fernandina. I had never traveled, didn't know nothing about traveling, but I was appointed leader. I only had one man, and he didn't show up. So I was in the railroad station there about maybe 2 hours or 3 hours waiting for the train. I had all these papers. I was appointed leader. And I met a guy from Jasper, Florida. He was also going in the Army. And we struck a good friendship, and we were talking, and finally called our train. And he said, "You got your ticket?" I said, "No." He said, "You're supposed to take your papers to the ticket and get a ticket for them." Well, I'm sitting in the train station 2 hours. I didn't think about that. So,
Nobody told you.
So the last minute I get a ticket and I get on the train. We gets on the train. And I was so excited about going out to, hadn't been out the state of Florida. In fact, I hadn't been out of Fernandina, Jacksonville, as far as I've ever been. And I was pretty excited about going. And we were on the train, and a guy came by the porter selling a cup of coffee for a nickel. So he and I bought a cup of coffee. I said, "Hey, no sugar in this coffee." He said, 5 cents a cube of sugar. So I had to pay. I bought three. I had to pay 15 cents extra for the sugar. I said, "Boy, my brother taught me about these problems." And I said, "I'm learning." But when we got the Fort Benning, I had a tablet, and I took the names of all the towns we went through going to Fort Benning, because I just wanted to see every town. And I had a list that long, a little town, just the name of the town. And I had all those towns written down in the paper. And we get to Fort Benning, Georgia. And everybody was, if a guy had been in the Army a couple of weeks ahead of you, he was definitely afraid of him. Boy, he could give orders like a man, a sergeant or something like that. He would tell you to do something and you jump to it, you know. And we were around there, and I had this money, and we could buy a thing. Guys would come and say, "I'll sell you a glass of ice water for a nickel." We would buy ice water because it was hot out there, you know, and we had the money to buy things with. We went to the movie, and I went to a ball game, 15 cents. And I said, "It's not bad if you got money." And I think we were the only two in the whole group had some money. And we were standing out in formation one day, and this guy asked the two volunteers, "Say, y'all want to make a little money? Need two volunteers." And he said, you, and picked my buddy and I. And we were only two who had money. But they wanted us to go to the officer club and be a waiter or something, you know. We went to the officer club, and I think we made about $8, and we were only two who had money. I said, "Money makes money." I was looking for my friend when we got on the train to go to take basic training and go to our camp, and he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And I look around, I say, "Where's my friend?" He said he had to go some kind of something, Dr. Stein, something wrong or something, and he wasn't there.
So how was your basic training? What did you?
We went to Camp Breckenridge, Kentucky for basic training, mm-hmm. and it was hot, and all we did was drill, go up in those hills, and most of our basic training was really, we'd go on these 3 or 4 mile hikes, and we'd go in this field, and we'd surround the field and chase rabbits. I've never seen so many rabbits in my life as I've seen in Kentucky. And we would kill rabbits and bring them back and give them to the folk companies was there. And most of those guys were southern guys, and they ate rabbits and stuff. I didn't eat no rabbit. But they ate them, and we put them out to the companies, and they would eat them, you know, cook them and eat them. And I was in a barrack one day, and one of the guys came upstairs where I was with a bugle. And I said, "Where did you get that from?" He said, "The sergeant gave it to me and want me to learn how to be the bugler." I said, "Well, let me show you how to blow it." Because here, we had a drum and bugle corps, and I was a bugler. And I was there blowing this bugle, blowing bugle calls, and the sergeant come running upstairs. "Who was blowing the bugle?" He said, "Delaney." And from then on, I was the company bugler. And
it doesn't happen very often in the Army that you know something and you're using your knowledge, So you finish basic training. Where did you go from basic training?
From basic training, I had to go take tech training to learn how to become a bugler.
Oh, okay.
So they sent me to band training unit in Camp Lee, Virginia. I had never seen mountains before, and we was on the train and to Bluefield, West Virginia, when I seen my first big mountain. Somewhere. I was sitting on the very end of the train, had a chair back there, just enjoying the scenery. And we went to Camp Lee, Virginia. We were supposed to stay about 8 weeks or something like that for tech training. And after we finished tech training, we were supposed to get a furlough home, a delay en route furlough. That's a furlough. You leave Virginia, come to Florida, you go back to Virginia and go, instead of leaving Fernandina and go, you had to go back to Virginia, buy a ticket to go that way. So I was sitting there, all my money was gone by that time. I didn't have nothing. And I hadn't got paid for 4 or 5 months I was in the Army, because my brother had an allotment, Class E allotment, and I had one, and they didn't give 2 Class E allotments to one family member. I had to make out a different kind of allotment for her to get it. And so that mean I was redlined. That mean you don't get no money. So I was broke, didn't have no money. And the sergeant came up and said, "Y'all getting a furlough in the morning." And I didn't have a penny to my name, but I had to buy a ticket from Camp Lee, Virginia to Florida and back, a round-trip ticket. And I didn't have a penny. So I goes in the office, and I sent a telegram. And all the guys getting ready to go for furlough, and I didn't have no money, so I just assumed I couldn't make it, you know. So I had not accepted the fact that I wasn't going to be able to come home on furlough. And a guy said, "Come on, I'll take you to a movie." I went to the movie, and before I went to the movie, I went by the office, and sent a telegram home. I said, send me $30 tonight. I'm getting a furlough in the morning. I had no idea I was going to get the $30, but when I got out the movie, I stopped by the headquarters, and it was there. So I came home on furlough, and things were so dead around here. I didn't want to even stay here in Herndon. I stayed here 3 or 4 days, and I was ready to go back to camp. And I left home a couple of days earlier so I could stop in Cincinnati, Ohio. I had a little money then, what my mother gave me. And I go, when I get back, when I left here, and all my old friends was gone. Nobody was there but old people what I didn't hardly know. Well, I knew them, but and you go to where they were, and all of them think you had money. Every one of them, soldiers, and telling, hey, buy me a drink, buy this. And I didn't have no money. I left here, went back to camp, and that's when I seen my first snow in Camp Breckinridge, Kentucky. I went out to blow the bugle that morning, and snow was all over the ground. I'd never seen snow before. And I slipped down off the steps on that ice and bust the bugle. I had to tape it up so I could blow it and get a sound out of it. We stayed there not too much longer back in Kentucky. And then one morning early, we was packed up, ready to go. So we get on the train, and we wind up in Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. And we were there. They give us a pass, overnight pass. I had got paid, and I had a little money. And the four of us, three of us good buddies, we went to New York, give us a pass to New York. We went to this nightclub, Small's Paradise. We had a great time. And I've never drank nothing. I always, and still don't. But they say, come on, get a zombie. Say, it tastes just like lemonade, you know. I said, okay, why not? I got this zombies, and they say they sell him one to a customer. And I should have known it was pretty strong then, selling one to a customer. But I drank it wasn't bad. But boy, that thing had me. Oh, boy. Anyway, we made it back to camp. And next couple of days, we were pulling out. We put us on the train. We're on the train, and we go walking through Grand Central Station. We all, the whole company, all of us soldiers going through station, and they say, get over there in that corner and sit down. And we sitting down. I'm thinking we in the station. And I say, the station is moving. And we were on a barge going out to catch the ship. And I had no idea we was going to move. This place, I'm thinking we in the railroad station. I said, the thing moving. And that was in February. And we got on the ship. We had to go straight up, looks like, on this gangplank with all this pack on our back and a duffel bag with all your equipment, gas mask, gun, all this going straight up.
Now that was in February 1945? 45?
Yeah. 45.
45, okay.
We get on the ship. I say, boy, I get a chance. I've always wanted to see the world. I'm going somewhere. I had no idea where we were going. And I said, boy, this is going to be nice. Oh, when that ship started up, I could smell that diesel fuel, and the more I smelled it, the sicker I was getting. I was so sick. And we got in that Atlantic, and that water was so rough, we was on a big troop ship.
Do you remember the name of the ship?
I think it was the USS Mount Vermont. It used to be a ocean liner, but they converted into a troop ship. And we were on this ship, and we had about 5,000 soldiers on it. And I think 4,999 of them were seasick.
Now, did you go in a convoy or did the ship by itself?
No, we was on a fast ship.
Fast ship, yeah. Okay.
And it didn't. And the wave was going all the way to the top deck up there, and that was that Atlantic was real rough during February, and I was laying on my bunk with a bucket between my legs, and I was hoping I'd hurry and die. I was so sick. For 11 days it took us across. And when we got off the ship, it was fairly early that morning. We was pretty happy about hurrying to get off the ship.
Now, where did you land?
Liverpool.
Oh, Liverpool, okay, in England, yeah.
We land in Liverpool, and we standing up, wondering when we getting off the ship. They let all the white soldiers get off all that day. They didn't let us off the ship till about midnight that night. No black got off that ship till about midnight that night. They didn't look like they didn't even want us to be seen over there, you know, during that time. And got off.
Well, that brings me to the other topic that I mentioned to you. You know, how did the Army treat blacks?
Well, one thing I really thought was awful. White German POWs could go in a theater we couldn't go in Kentucky. I thought that was pretty bad.
I think that's pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah.
And when you were in England, how long were you in England?
Not very long.
Not very long.
Just maybe a week or so. Oh. But we were in a little village called Burley. Just a little farm village. And we were there maybe a week or so, and three of us decided we wanted to walk and see the nearby villages, you know. We were walking, and we went down this paved, it was a road paved, and we went down this road, and I know we weren't supposed to do that, but we've been there, you know, laying around for 3 or 4 days, and I said, let's go down, see what's to this village down there. We started down this road, and we met three girls, and we was talking to them on their bikes. And they were ahead of me, and I was back. And I was leaning on this girl bike talking to her. And I heard this truck coming around the curve. And the guy said, that could be one of our trucks. I said, no, our trucks hadn't got here yet. And when I looked, there was our captain in this truck. And I leaned down on the bike, and he passed me, and he stopped to these guys down there, the other guys. Boy, and he chewed them out. He'd get back to the camp, and then he back up to me. And he said, Delaney, you no longer what you were. You are private, understand, private. And took my stripe. I had one stripe, PFC. He took my stripe. And the girl said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I made you lose your stripe." I said, "Oh, don't worry about it, I'll get it back." And it was a long time before I got my stripe back. But, and he carried it. We went back to the company, and where we were living, it must have been some rich person owned this big estate where we were camped at, and they had this huge horse stable. And they locked us up in this horse stable overnight. Our company commander, Captain Cronemeyer, had us locked up in this horse stable that night. And we were in there, and they were supposed to give us just a small ration, you know, as our punishment for going out to camp. And an officer came down there, a major, came to visit the new troops coming in. That was part of his job. And he said, and somebody, he I don't know how he spotted us in there, but he said, "One of these fellows." And our captain, we locked him up for punishment for going off to. He said, "Wait a minute. Say, you don't pull the state-style stuff over here. Say, this is war. These same three guys might save your butt over here, you know."
Say, he didn't say butt.
He chewed him, our captain, out.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they let us out right away. He said, "You leave this state-style stuff back to the state. Yeah. Say, you don't bring this over here." And, boy, we were so happy.
Now you went to France after that, right?
Yeah. We went to, caught a train and went to Southampton.
Southampton, okay.
And that's when we catch another ship across the English Channel. And we land at Le Havre, France.
Now, what unit were you with at the time? You were
with the same company.
Yeah, but what company was it?
It was a quartermaster service company.
Service company.
Yeah. 4338 QM. 4338 quartermaster service company.
4338.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we go.
So you landed in Le Havre?
Le Havre, France.
And then from there you.
Then we get on the train, freight train. Mm-hmm. We riding in the car on top of the freight train going all through. And we, and I spent my 19th birthday in Cologne, Germany.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the young kid from Fernandina.
Yeah.
Going halfway around the world, ended up in Cologne.
Cologne, Germany, on my 19th birthday. And then we study on the move. Our company commander would tell us, "We're going to run this outfit. We're going to stay here and run this. We are like a gasoline depot or something like that. We're going to run it and we won't be moving." And just as we bed down after we work all day, moving, hauling gasoline and stuff, 5 o'clock that morning, whistle blow, "Let's move it, move it, move it." Truck's out there waiting. And then we got to pack up and go. We gone again, further on up. And we were in, and we go all the way. We just stayed on the move. We catch freight trains and we going on up. That's where we went through Belgium, Luxembourg, and we wind up in what they call it during that time, Alsace-Lorraine. All right. We were there. I think we were there longer than we were anywhere. And we went on up into Germany. And that's where I met my brother. I saw this truck and outfit, this truck. And I flagged this truck down because it had my brother's company number on it. And Scott. I said, you got a Delaney in your outfit? He said, yeah. I said, well, where are you stationed? He said, about 40 miles. I said, so I asked my sergeant, I said, can I go there, see my brother? He said, if you be back 4 days, we could be shipping out again. I said, okay. This guy promised he'd bring me back, you know. And I went to my brother's outfit. He wasn't there. He was out on convoy. So the next day, I'm back there. We working, loading gasoline. And my brother drove up there in a weapon carrier. And that's when he spent the day with me in my outfit. And went to my company, met my company commander and everything. And then he takes off.
Now a weapons carrier is a 2 or 3 axle small truck.
Yeah.
Just for the folks who don't know about it.
Yeah, a weapon carrier. Incidentally, I used to ride, later on, and I used to ride on with a guy in the Philippines in a weapon carrier. He'd ask me, say, hey, Delaney, want to ride San Fernando with me? I said, yes. And I would get on this weapon carrier with this drunk, and he would be singing loud, and the minute he stopped singing, you know he's fast asleep. And he would run into things, hit things, and I would be back there praying. I said, Lord, if I make this trip, I'll never ride with this drunk no more.
But let me ask you now. You went from Germany to the Far East.
Oh, yeah. I went to, after I left in Germany, after the war was over in Germany, we were thinking we were coming home when they sent us back. We stayed in Germany a good while. And we seen some liberated Russian prisoners too. And we had one guy in our outfit. He was the comedian in our outfit. You could always see a lot of guys around his bunk, because he would tell lies, and no two lies was alike, all different. And he would have everybody laughing all the time. And he would stumble up on these Russian refugees, and they would give him this stuff they would drink, and he'd be drunk, and two little kids, looked like kids, bringing him on his shoulder, bringing him back to our camp. And he was the funniest guy you ever met. And I had a bad case of tonsillitis when I was in Germany. And they carried me. We were living in a big building. And the next building over was the hospital. And they carried me. Before it was a hospital, the next building, before they made a hospital out of it, they carried me. I got sick and they carried me to a field hospital way out in the woods in tents. And I was out there in this tent burning up with fever and tonsillitis. And the day I got there, the hospital was moving. And I'm looking, wondering when they was gonna come and get me. They got everything, took the tent down, took all the cots down except the one I was in, and they loaded them up in trucks. And I'm laying up there, wondering when they was gonna come and get me. And they had everything. Everything was gone. I'm laying out there in the woods in this cot. And later on, somebody thought about the new patient they brought in, and they come back out there and got me. And then they moved, the hospital had moved right side the building where I was living at. And that's when they took my tonsils out. Man, oh man. And the nurse would make fun at these guys. They was taking about 5 or 6 every day, soldiers, and taking them and circumcising. And the nurse would come in there and say, "Good morning, boys. How's those things doing this morning?" And boy, it was that was their joke, you know. Yeah. And but anyway, after they decide to send us back to France, we were in Calais staging area, and that's when I met 2 or 3 other guys, my good friends, my buddy who I grew up with. I met him over there. He was there in Calais staging area.
In Calais, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And this other guy what living here now, I met him there.
Do you know his name?
Yeah, Ulysses, Rayfield Green.
Rayfield Green.
He lived up by Container.
And you had never seen him before?
I never seen him before.
But he had seen you.
But he walked up to me and said, "Hey, I know you." I said, "I don't know you." He said, "You from Fernandina, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah." And that's how I met him. Later on, we was working together out to the mill. But and another guy I met over there, what I knew from here, I met him there. But my best friend, you had to get in line for donuts and drink, whether you want a Coke or beer. Well, he was in this line. He was the fat guy in our school, in our class. He always eat like a pig, you know. And we'd have a stick about this long with 3 donuts on it, and then we'd get in the drink line. He had a stick about that long with donuts all the way up. And he called me, "Hey, Jack." I said, "That got to be somebody from home." And it was him. And then we'd go to this down in the hole, they call it, where they entertain troops, USO shows. And incidentally, a lady is here today, what I seen over there.
Is that right?
She live here now. And I talked to her. We just happened to be talking, and she said I was an entertainer. And she was there, and I said, "When were you there?" It was the same time I was there, you know. And that's, she and I are good friends now.
Yeah.
And I used to go every day, seeing Bob Hope and Francis Langford and Mickey Rooney.
No kidding.
And they put on good shows for us. And then we get on it. All one morning they call us out and say, "Let's go, it's time to go." And we went down to they load us up on trucks. We go down to the waterfront and then we catch the ship.
Back on the ship, huh?
Back on the ship. And some of them were dumb enough to think we were coming home.
and how about you?
Yeah. I didn't care where I go. I wanted to see just as much of the world as I could. I was just hoping that the water be calm where I wouldn't be seasick no more. And then we were...
Now, that was by now summer 45, right?
Yeah.
Then the water was pretty calm.
Pretty calm.
Yeah.
And we were on the Mediterranean, and we passed by, and someone pointed off, said, "That's South Africa." We were on the ship. We could see lights. Say, "That's Africa."
Did you go through the Suez Canal?
Mm-mm. Panama Canal. We were on the Mediterranean when we left France.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay.
And then we hooked up to... We went through the Panama Canal and the ship dock.
Mm-hmm.
So something looked like a huge warehouse. And we were there to this warehouse, and they had theaters going, just all kind of entertainment, and you could go in the PX and buy things, you know, and it was nice. And the same guy who was the comedian, he said, we was telling him, he said, "Now I'm not getting off the ship tonight, I'm getting off tomorrow. I'm going to press my pants, I want to be the sharpest thing yet, you know, I'm going to sleep." He was sleeping on his pants, had them all pressed out, and everything. He was going go there that next morning. We told them what a great time we had, you know. I'm going in the morning. Next morning, we was out in the Pacific. he was disappointed because he missed it all. We stayed on the ship about 42 days.
Okay.
42
and you landed in the Philippines?
In the Philippines. Yeah. We were right off. When we heard the news that they dropped an atomic bomb on Japan, and we said, what the heck one bomb going to do, you know? We see 2,000 bombers going over to bomb Germany.
Yeah.
And then they tell about one bomb, you know. They thought everybody's crazy, you know, one bomb. And a couple of days later, they drop another one. We didn't even think about it, you know. And then the next thing you know, the war is over. And it was three of us ships going in the Pacific. They was right behind us, and they was fast ships, you know. They say they only get one shot at a fast ship.
Yeah.
And we were on fast ships going over. And so we never worried about that. And when we heard the war was over, we gets up on deck, all the guns start firing, and I never seen so many ships in my life. Ships was everywhere. I said, where did they come from? I didn't have. It was only three of us, and all at once ships all around us, and all of them firing guns. And it was a celebration you wouldn't believe. Man, it was great. And so we were dumb enough to think the ship was going to turn around and come back to the state. And we wind up in Philippine Island, in Manila. And then I stayed there 7 months after the war was over. And then they assigned me to a Japanese prison camp. We had about 3,000 Japanese prisoners in our camp. And I was supply sergeant. My job was to get supplies, what they need. If this company wanted 5 or 10 to work, do some work around their company, we'd check them out, check them back in, had to be back in. If any was sick, we'd take them to the big prison camp, Lupao prison camp. That's where they had this Japanese, big high-ranking Japanese general in Lupao prison camp there. And I think he was executed or hung there.
No kidding. Yeah, but this goes to show you how important the quartermaster is to an army. Without the quartermaster, nothing runs, right?
You've got to keep
you've got to
fed and fuel and trucks and whatnot. Yeah. But I was supply sergeant, and I had Philippine drivers, and I put Japanese, about 3 or 4 Japanese on the truck to load the stuff, you know. And I go to 10 miles out this direction, Wall City, 10 miles out this, to get what I had to get.
Yeah.
And those Japanese, I remember the first time I went in there in the tent after it was another company that was over this Japanese prison camp before we took over, but they had more points and it was being shipped home. And when they put us there, the first time I had to stoop down to go in the tent, the headquarters tent, I stooped over to go in the tent. And this Japanese prisoner was standing right beside me. And the first thing he did was reach and grab my 45 right out the holster. And I just turned around. I was just listening, waiting to hear a shot. And I thought he was going to shoot me. And the chief, he said, he cleans the gun for the other sergeant every day. But nobody tells me this, you know. And the chief, He could speak several different languages. He could speak German. He was a very wealthy Japanese, and we call him Chief. I don't think he was in service, but he had some kind of business and thing going on in the Philippines, and he was a very wealthy man. I used to tell him, I said, Chief, what you gonna do with all this money you got? He said, they take. I said, I know you got some here somewhere. But he was quite a guy, and they had a little Japanese prisoner there. He was on one of these little old boats what was sunk by American, and he could speak no English at all. But everybody, when I would take him with me, to check out different things, everybody fell in love with this little kid, you know. He just looked like a little kid, you know. And I said, what did you do when the American plane shot up your boat you was on? He said, I say, help me. Help me. Yeah. You know. His name was Osoto. And I would take him everywhere because I could get things. People looked at him and felt sorry for him. Just said, yeah, take some more. You know. But it was, I used to go all in the Philippines. I had a good time in the Philippines.
Seems to me you were typically good quartermaster sergeant.
You took
a little guy along, and then you took the big stuff away from him.
And I could get things. The Japanese prisoners, they thought a lot of me, because I used to get things for them they didn't have. Mm-hmm. I used to could get fresh fish for them. I could get sugar for them they never had when the other company had them, you know. They didn't get these things, but I would I'd do a little wheeling and dealing, you know. I was a Sergeant Bilko. I got something you want. What you got to trade for it? You got some fresh fish or something like that? And and they made me a cake on my birthday there, my 20th birthday. And I'll never forget, it had Happy Birthday Mr. Delaney on it. And but at Philippine, we got there in rainy season. And it rained every day we were there, I say. And we were wearing ponchos 2 or 3 weeks after it stopped raining. We were so used to wearing these ponchos, you know. We just, every day it rained. I said, golly, I never seen so much water.
So when did you return? When did you leave the Philippines? You went back to the States?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came back.
When was that about?
You had to get out on the point system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I finally got enough points to come back home. And we got on this ship, the Ocean Mail. It was a little old freighter, and we didn't have that many troops on it. But, they sent us to the camp to wait on this ship. And finally my time. And I got sick again. I was laying up in the tent there, and my heart started running away. And they sent me to the dispensary. And the doctor gave me a pill, looked like the size of a bird egg, a big pill. He said, I see, no way in the world I can swallow that thing. He said, cut it up, and whatever you do, take it. And I took the pill, and it stopped. It was all right. Anyway, I came back on the Ocean Mail, the freighter. I got a picture of the ship landing in California, all the troops hanging all over the side. I doubt if you can even see me. I can't even make out me on it, but I know I was on it. And sent us back to California. And I was on, when they put me on a train to go to Camp Shelby, Mississippi, to get our discharge. And I think it took about 5 days, because the troop train just go all around, all about. Anyway, I don't think I slept an hour the whole time I was on the train. I wanted to see everything, you know, everything around the corner. All I could remember was the stream of water looked like it was following the train all around, you know, going through Colorado and all that. I thought that was the most beautiful country I'd ever seen. And anyhow, I happened to see this farm out there. I didn't see no, all out west, we stopped in Utah to a railroad station there. And they give us a few minutes to go in there, you know, and get you a bar of candy or something to drink. And I said, I don't see no black people in, none out west, you know. I didn't see any. And the first one I seen was out there, he was trains stop, and I said, hey, what state are we in? And he said, Arkansas. I said, oh, I know I'm down south now. Arkansas. And we wind up in Camp Shelby, Mississippi to get our discharge. And they told us, hey, whatever you do, when we get our discharge, we went to the railroad station. They told us in the railroad station, whatever you do, say some girls will be coming here trying to make you follow them. Whatever you do, don't do it, because we've seen too many going there and going town following these girls and don't have tickets when they come back. They don't clip them, you know. Say whatever you do, don't do it. So I sit in the station. I say, I'm not going nowhere. I'm going home with my little change. Girl come in there. Say, so you want to have a good time? I said, no. At time.
And you came back to Fernandina. When did you arrive in Fernandina?
Must have been June. I got discharged about June the 13th. Must have been about the 14th of June.
46.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about you married your sweetheart. You knew her from...
Oh, I knew her when she was in third grade in school.
Yeah.
You know, I was like a pretty face, and she was a cute little thing, you know.
And, now, what was her name and maiden name?
Mamie Shepherd was her name.
Mamie Shepherd.
Yeah.
And you still call her Mamie today.
Yeah. And she was, I knew her then, and she used to come to my house. She lived out south side, way out there. But in school was about middle ways between my house and where she lived out south side. But my sister was in her class in school, and she would come to my house with my sister when she was about in third grade, because my mother would be sitting out on the porch, and my sister would say, I'm going in there and fix something. And my mother, okay. She liked her to go in there and fix something, you know. And she would follow my sister home, because my sister always going in the kitchen fixing something, you know. And she was little, but she could fix all kind of good things, you know.
Now, when did you get married?
When I came back from the Army, I didn't think too much, because I didn't see no one here I knew, you know. I just about forgot about her. But when I came back from the Army, I didn't see no one, and my grandmother happened to be here. She lived further down south in a little town, Boca Grande, Little Island, where her husband was a worked for the railroad, my granddad, and he had been working there a long time. And I said, I was just miserable around Fernandina. I said, I can't stay here. I got to go. She said, well, why don't you come down to Boca Grande, this little island with me? Stay a couple of days. I said, okay. So I go down to Boca Grande with her. Just a little strip of land. And I wind up getting a job there for the railroad, loading ships, doing stevedore work. And it was a lot of fun there. That was my growing up time around there on this little island. Them people on there schooled me, you know. I'm just happy-go-lucky going on the water with my dog. And I just having a great time. And on payday, I'd hop on the train and go to nearby towns, spend all my money and get back. And then my uncle, he was down there by marriage. And he would buy a new Buick just about every year. And he, if his Buick say 100 miles an hour, that's what he would drive. If he had to go three blocks, he'd drive 100 miles an hour. We'd get in the car and we'd go to all these nearby towns. We'd go to a little town and we used to like to play cards, little poker, and they didn't, it's a game most of blacks play, George's skin. That's a quick game, you know. And my uncle liked to play that. And he'd go to these little towns and say, he'd look around, he'd say, things are a little dead here, let's go to another town. He'd name some town, say, I heard they're having a good time down there. Let's go down there. And you think he talking about a town from here to Jacksonville. He talking about a town 100 miles away.
Oh, my.
And we'd get in the car and he'd go flying. I remember one time.
So how did she get together with Mamie then?
I came back. After I quit the job, I'd work. And I get tired and I quit the job and take off and go someplace else. Mm-hmm. And I wind up, the last time I quit the job, I wind up in Evansville, Indiana. And that was the coldest place I'd ever been in my life. And I didn't have nothing but summer Florida clothes. I had one leather jacket and it had a silk lining. And it was so cold, I had to touch that jacket. And I was, and everything was on strike there. I couldn't get a job nowhere. And I spent all my money. My landlady, everything I had of any value was in pawn. My landlady told me, said, well, I'm not going to put you out. So you can stay here, but I can't feed you. I said, that's all right, fine, till you get a job. And I remember she told me, said, would you take these ashes out to the fence and dump them out for me? I said, sure. I'm going to carry these ashes out. And I look and I see a quarter. I said, oh. I said, God, I can eat this morning. I'll find this quarter. And I go to this restaurant and I got a cup of coffee for nickel and a donut for a nickel. And I tipped the waitress the 15 cent. I said, good God, I could have done all for that 15 cent I just gave away. But that was the best 15 cent investment I ever made. The waitress said she fell madly in love with me. Her name was Marion. And it was her aunt place. So she stopped feeding me. So I had a place to stay and food. But I never was the type to, I like having my own, you know? And I didn't like that at all, that kind of arrangement.
So you went back to Fernandina?
I finally got a job.
Yeah.
To a restaurant.
Oh.
Man asked me, can you cook? I said, yes, I've never cooked nothing in my life. I got a job to this Chinese restaurant. And the waitress seen, I didn't know nothing. So she said, come here, let me show you what you have to do. So she showed me. And I got pretty good. I got my stuff out of pawn, put a little money in the bank. But I couldn't cope with that cold weather. I said, I'm going back to Florida. After I got my money out the bank, got all my stuff out of pawn, paid up my rent, and I left there on a Christmas day. And I got in the station in Jacksonville, and I still wasn't ready to go home. I said, I think I'll go to Miami and stay. I go around there and stay. But I didn't like Miami at all. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So I left Miami. I had just enough money to come to Fernandina. I said, I'm going to Fernandina and I'm going to stay. If I get a job, if I don't, I'd give it a month. If I say I don't get a job in a month, I'm going back for the railroad. And I got a job. I met a couple of guys walking down the street and they say, we just got a job to container and say we got to pass a physical before we can get on. So they asked me, say, would you go and take the physical for me? Say, because I know I'm not going to pass. I said, no, I want a job for myself. Can't do that for you. And sure enough, these two guys, they turned them down. And I went and got a buddy of mine. I said, come on, let's go get these two jobs. And we went, we got a job to container. And I was working for the meanest, nastiest man ever lived, my foreman.
Okay.
His shift was always short of workers because nobody wanted to work with him. He was a mean, nasty man. But I stayed with him 5 years. This new friend of mine, he said, come on, I want to take you to meet. He was from Georgia, but he lived here. He said, I want to take you to meet a pretty girl. Say, I can't get to first base with her. Maybe you might get lucky. And he carried me to meet Mamie, who I knew all the time. And when he carried me out there, I didn't tell him that I knew all. She used to be my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And Mamie saw me and she come up there and he said, you know her? I said, yeah. Then he carried me to meet three other girls up in Georgia somewhere and I knew them too. He said, golly. He said, I would quit carrying you anyway. But anyway, I started going out there to see Mamie.
Mamie was it?
Yes. I started going to see Mamie. And my granddaddy died, who was my foreman to the railroad, after he retired and moved here. And I went to his funeral. And Mamie was there. And I borrowed my brother-in-law's car to go to the funeral. Mm-hmm. And we was leaving the funeral. And I said, hey. I said, since we already dressed, let's go get married. I never thought about marrying nobody before. It never occurred to me. She said, you kidding? I said, no. And I just started driving. And I think I had about $6 or $7 in my pocket. I drove to Kingland, Georgia. And, got married with just enough to get married. I didn't have a dime left, I don't think. She said, I don't want a justice of peace to marry me. I want to be married by a preacher. I said, okay. So this justice of peace told us where the preacher was, Reverend Dawson. We went down to his house after we got the papers. We got married. And we've been married ever since. 48 years ago, over 48 years ago.
That's a great story. Now, let me ask you something else. You got discharged as a corporal, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have anything else that you like to add to the story? I mean, that you just told us here. We wanted to talk a little bit more about discrimination in the army. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about?
Well, we pretty well. We would go to town on passes and everything, but we stayed in the black area.
Yeah. I mean, the army was segregated. Oh, right?
Yeah, we had white officers. Mm-hmm. I never seen a black officer, as I say, until I saw this black chaplain over in Europe.
Yeah.
And then when our officers shipped out over in the Philippines, they were replaced by black officers, which we then got so used to our white officers. Then, you know, Captain Cronemeyer, he was a pretty nice, decent guy.
But by that time, you were already an old soldier now.
Yeah,
right?
Old soldier. I could handle anything, you know.
Right.
He was a little West Pointer. He could drill you all day long, little old Captain God. He never got tired. I said, my God. And our first sergeant, he was a city man.
He was a black man?
He was black. Boy, he was a sergeant. Man, Sergeant Sellers.
What was his name?
Sellers. Sellers, yeah. Like that. He was from New Jersey. And but you take him out in the woods. I remember we was out on bivouac one time.
He was lost.
We was out on bivouac, and we had our little pup tents, two to a man to sleep in. Mm-hmm. And some of the guys put this pumps what they use to pump up the heat water. Was a little stove or something.
Oh, yeah.
But had a little pump,
right.
You know. And they put the hose up under his pup tent and was shooting this air in there, you know. And everybody standing around. And all it was, that tent jumped up in there and he went flying. Boy. And if he'd have found out who it was, he'd have killed him. Everybody laughed at him.
Let me ask you something else. How did the army life help you in civilian life or hinder you? You seem to have enjoyed the travel.
Yeah, I did. I love travel.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether I would ever got out of Fernandina or not if I hadn't gone in the army. So I was happy to go in. Because I wouldn't trade all the places I've been and things I've seen for nothing in the world. I really enjoyed it. But we had a good relationship with the kids growing up here. You know, I have friends here now what I knew a long time ago when we were playing ball.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Guy used to work at the post office. Claude Haddock. He was. And we'd meet out at the ballpark, white, black, and we would pick teams. We'd pick who was the best ball player, you know. We didn't care if it was a polka dot. We wanted a good ball player. And he'd be one we'd always pick. And it was one here, Osam, Chinese. He couldn't play ball worth 2 cents, but he was the one. If we didn't have enough, well, give me Bo. I'll take him. But he used to always be there with his bat and glove, you know. Well, give me Bo. I don't want him to know I said that, because he's still around there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, Bo made I think he bought a lot of land and planted pine trees on it. Mm. Yeah. Somewhere with a lot of pine trees, I heard.
Well, I guess we conclude the interview today and sign off.
All right.
I want to thank you for sharing your recollections with me and with the nation.
I'll probably think of something else before after. Okay.
Well, this concludes the interview with James Delaney. We certainly loved your stories.
I enjoy
thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I still want you to get